Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. We're back from vacation with a good lineup on the show tonight. At 7:30, we'll talk with Daniel Brown, a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. They shut down Candlestick Park for the 49ers over the weekend, getting ready to move into Levi's Stadium. 8 o'clock, Robert Klemko, a reporter for MMQB and Sports Illustrated, will join us. He'll talk about the Bills moving to training camp this year. And former NFL referee Mike Carey joins us at 8:30. He's now an analyst on NFL rules for the NFL on CBS.
Yes. This is pandemonium.
At the 10, at the 5, heads to the end zone. Touchdown, C.J. Spiller.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Yep, we're back and glad to be here. Good evening. Welcome to John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO for a Monday night, July 14th, leading up to training camp. Can you believe it? Just 4 nights away. We'll be broadcasting live from St. John Fisher College this Friday night at 7 o'clock. 7 to 9 is the Bills report for training camp. First practice on Sunday, July 20th, this Sunday night. A lot to talk about. And thank you very much for tuning in tonight. Right off the bat, thanks to Sal Capaccio, Sal Sports, our guy who filled in for us the last couple of weeks, did a great job. I was out of town the first week that I was off, 2 weeks ago, in Outer Banks of North Carolina. Survived Hurricane Arthur, not much to speak of there. But back in town last week, kind of dropping in every once in a while, driving around and listening to the show once in a while. Sal does an outstanding job. Always feel like the show is in great hands with Sal Capaccio, and I want to publicly thank him for doing such a great job. Some of the great guests he had on, some of the great topics he generated, and some of the excitement and buzz that he captured in the last 2 weeks. So Sal Capaccio is the man, and we thank him very much for filling in the last couple of weeks while we were able to enjoy vacation and get ready for the upcoming training camp. Not a whole lot happened around here in One Bills Drive while I was gone, and what happened did not enthuse me all that much. In particular, the injury to Kiko Alonso, that hit like a ton of bricks. What was it? I want to say a couple of Tuesday nights ago. Yeah, when the news came out, Jay Harris. Wasn't
about
it Tuesday
2 weeks
night?
Ago.
It was, and it was like 8:30, 9:30 at night.
Yep.
And I got a text from my brother who was up here, and I didn't, of course, I didn't believe him. What are you talking about? Off-season workout. I mean, just terrible. What a blow.
Yeah.
And a great guy. And that's the thing. Among the many reasons that I hate that news, including, you know, the impact on the Buffalo defense, the chance for Kiko to follow up his outstanding rookie year with another good year, a chance to watch Kiko play the outside linebacker spot, all of that stuff hurts. And what really hurts is he's such a good kid. And I was just rooting for him to kind of pick up right where he left off. And it's not going to happen this year anyway, as Kiko has been ruled out for the upcoming season. I texted Kiko that night. So it was July 1st. That was the Tuesday, right? And I said, just sorry to hear about the news. Get well. And I got one sentence response from Kiko. Thanks. It's okay. I'll be good. And I thought, that's good. I mean, that's an optimistic. It's okay. I'll be good. But I do. I really like Kiko as a player, obviously, and really want to see him succeed in his NFL career because he's such a good kid and works so hard. And it's a blow. Let's face it. It's a blow. Who's going to take his place? I don't know. That's one of the issues going to training camp, isn't it? Is it Nigel Branham? Is it Keith Rivers? Is it somebody else we're not thinking of? I know Preston Brown has been mentioned. I think Brown's got a lot on his plate at the middle linebacker spot. I'd be surprised at that, but we don't know yet. We may start to get an inkling about that on Sunday for the first nighttime practice, but that's a blow. Other than that, not a whole lot went on around the Buffalo Bills that I can tell. The ownership issues remain. The books, as they call it, is out there. Within the next couple of weeks, we should have a better sense of the interested parties, and we are all interested to see how that plays out, obviously, but no concrete news on that coming out over the last few weeks. So it's always, it seems like that's always the good week to take off, the good weeks to take off, those weeks just prior to training camp. And that's where we are now, prior to training camp, getting you all set up for the Bills' return to St. John Fisher College this Friday as they check in on Friday. First practice coming up on Sunday. It's the 15th practice, first 15th training camp the Bills have had in Rochester at St. John Fisher. Can you believe that? 15 years now they've been training down here. And I'm looking forward to getting down there, setting up and doing our show on Friday night. The first practice on Sunday and the players report on Friday. We're going to talk about camp a lot today. We're going to talk about a couple of other things. Some good guests lined up. You heard the lineup. Daniel Brown's going to join us at 7:30. He's a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. They had, I think, kind of a neat event in Candlestick Park in San Francisco on Saturday night as the 49ers said goodbye to old Candlestick Park. Of course, the Giants have been out of there for a while. The 49ers were the sole tenants for the last decade or more, and now they are out. They're getting set to move to the new Levi's Stadium in the Bay Area. And the end of Candlestick Park, they had like a flag football, touch football game that ended in sort of dramatic fashion. We'll talk with Daniel Brown about that at 7:30. One of the NFL's real flagship franchises, the 49ers, saying goodbye to their old stadium. We'll talk with Daniel Brown about the events of Saturday night. Robert Klemko is a reporter for Peter King's website, mmqb.com and Sports Illustrated. Robert Klemko is in town, actually covering the Bills as they get set for training camp. He'll be joining us tonight at 8 o'clock. We'll talk with Robert about what he sees of the Bills, why he's covering the move to training camp, and some of the stuff that he's written recently, including he spent a lot of time, it seems, at the NFL Rookie Symposium a couple of weeks ago. He'll be joining us live at 8 o'clock tonight. And former NFL official Mike Carey, you remember him? Well, he just stepped away from officiating to take a job as an analyst for the NFL on CBS as their officiating analyst. Of course, the Fox Network has Mike Pereira, and now CBS has Mike Carey to handle controversial calls and explain rules. We'll talk with Mike Carey about that new role and why he made the switch. He's going to join us from his home in California at 8:30 tonight. And as usual, we want to hear from you on the show. We love the interaction with listeners, and give us a call. Any thoughts you might have about the Bills as they approach training camp 4 days away, about the advent of training camp, what you think about the Bills going into the year. And we'll pose this question out there for you, just to get some response as you think about camp. And I guess I'm going to assume that most fans either will attend a training camp practice or would want to attend a training camp practice. And I was thinking about it. I was thinking about how I'm going to watch training camp practices, and maybe you have some thoughts on this. If you're going this Sunday night at 6 o'clock for the first practice, or if you're going at any time during training camp over the month when the Bills set up shop in Rochester, where do you think your eyes are going to go first when you attend your first practice? In other words, what are you most interested in seeing when you get to Bills training camp this year? Easy to say the quarterback. A lot of us will be looking at E.J. Manuel, no question about that. But how about the other end of his passes? How about Sammy Watkins? I mean, we are fortunate here in the media. We get a chance to watch the mini camp workouts and some of the OTA workouts. The fans have not seen it. They've not seen Sammy Watkins. Maybe that's where your eyes go first, the new guys, in particular the new guy that the Bills paid such a steep price to go up and get in the draft back in the first weekend of May. But where will your eyes go first? Will it be to Kiko's replacement? Who's going to replace Kiko? Will it be to Jarris Byrd replacement in the back end of the Buffalo defense? Where will you look first when you attend a training camp practice, whether it's this Sunday night's first practice or at any other time during the Bills training camp workouts at St. John Fisher College? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The phone lines are open, as they always are. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, it's 1-888-550-2550. And you can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. The Bills' first camp practice Sunday night, 6 o'clock. Where do you think your eyes will go first when you attend your first practice? Phone in tonight. Right now, the lines are open. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We've already had a couple of tweet responses. Jeff tweets in Watkins. Simple one-word answer, Watkins. And I think it's going to be hard for fans who attend the open practices at training camp not to keep an eye on Sammy Watkins. He is that spectacular. He is that solid. He's going to make those quarterbacks look good with his great catching radius. Mark tweets, EJ should be looking sharp on his throws. I think we're all looking for that. We are definitely looking for that. Bills for Life tweets, I always look to the future, so obviously I will be locked in on EJ. Weston Eisler tweets in, toss up for me. Do I look for Watkins first or EJ? That's where the media will go. I want to see linebacker and safety battle. Good points. The media will pay attention to EJ and Watkins, and there are other battles. There are other questions, including who replaces Kiko, who replaces Jairus Byrd. Is it going to be Denora Searcy? Is it going to be Duke Williams? Somebody else? Where will your eyes go first? What will you look for first when you attend Bills training camp this year? A tweet from Tommy K. Going to make sure no one slips on any wet mats. Forgot about that for a moment. Remember how that happened early on in camp last year? Kevin Cobb slipped on a wet mat for going from one side of the practice facility to the other. That turned into a pretty big injury for Kevin Cobb's future and for the Bills, at least early on in preseason last year. Zach Harkin tweets, it has to be at the linebacker position to see how they're going to line up without Kiko's presence. Yeah, I think you have to think about Kiko and who's going to replace him and what they look like. Those are some of the tweets to the question, where do your eyes go first if you attend a Bills training camp practice either this weekend or sometime in the next few weeks? Phone lines are open as well, 803-0550 or toll free 1-888-550-2550. Here's a call from Bill in Orchard Park. Bill, where do your eyes go first when you attend a Bills training camp practice this year?
I think it's got to go to the offense, Murph. I mean, I'm confident with our defense, and I think there's been more changes on the offensive side. Excited to see Mike Williams and Watkins, obviously. I really like this Dixon guy. I think he's a tough, hard runner. He's versatile. He's on special teams. I was wondering, how do you think they're going to work all four of these running backs into the game? Because I know back when we had Lynch and Spiller and Fred, it was a big deal. We had three backs, not enough to share the ball. How do you think they're going to work them in?
Well, that's a great question, and one of the reasons why it's a great question is because Chris Brown wrote about exactly that today at BuffaloBills.com. I would say, or is it today? Yeah. How will offense take advantage of the running back depth? And I think that's the question that you're referring to, as a matter of fact, Bill, is they seem to be deep there at the running back spot, and how do they take advantage of that depth? I don't know that it was a problem. I guess, you know, you mentioned a couple of years ago when they had Lynch and Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller. Early on, it was apparent that they had too much there and they couldn't feed them all. But since Marshawn Lynch has been gone, since it's just been Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller, I'd find it hard to argue that they've had a problem keeping them both happy and getting carries for both of them. I think they do it very well. They have done it very well. CJ obviously limited last year with his high ankle sprain, so he didn't get enough, and he would tell you that he just didn't have the health to get enough carries. But I do think they've done a pretty good job of portioning out those carries over the last few years. Now, to Chris Brown's article, and it is up on the website. I would direct you to that, BuffaloBills.com. That's one of the 25 pertinent issues facing the team. And so how do they take advantage of the running back depth? Well, Chris had a couple of different ideas. One of them is they intend on having a fast-paced offense again this year, which means more plays, perhaps. You know, they only, two teams, New England and Denver, had more snaps from scrimmage than the Bills had, about 70 plays a game last year. And they'd like to even dial it up even further this year. So more plays means more work for those backs. I think they look at their running backs and believe that they have and Chris wrote about this, different skill sets, if you think about it. And Fred Jackson has bulked up so much in the last few years that he is now definitely a between-the-tackles runner, a downhill runner, one cut and into the hole, and a very good blitz pickup man and a pretty capable receiver as well. I think CJ is the outside guy, you know, a guy who can make people miss in space. The other two, I would think you're right on about Booby Dixon. He's a power back, and I think he demonstrated a lot of that during the mini camp and OTA workouts. I mean, Booby Dixon, to my mind, could be your fullback, your short yardage back. He's done that before. And lastly, the trade for Bryce Brown. What is his role? I'm not as certain as his role yet, although I do think they wanted to build some depth there in case in case they had a situation like last year when CJ got hurt, and Bryce Brown certainly would provide depth. So it's an interesting question. You're onto it, caller, and I think Chris Brown is onto it and deals with it in depth on our website, finding a role for all of those running backs and how do they portion out the carries for all of those running backs. It's going to be one of the things, I think, one of the answers that we may see a little bit more of as the Bills hit the training camp. And that's the question we have on the table for you tonight. If you go to this Sunday's training camp practice or any training camp practice, where do your eyes go first? What are you looking for first from the Bills when you watch them on the field? Give us a call. The lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Or toll free 1-888-550-2550. 550-2550 from Twitter. You can reach us at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets. One more tweet anyway. Sammy Watkins, says Greg Utopio. That's what his eye will go first. I think from what would I look at first? Sammy Watkins would be my choice. He'd be the first thing I would look at. I think Sammy Watkins, and I saw a lot of him, not enough of him, because he had that 3 or 4 days off when he had to go out west to the rookie symposium. But I'd like to see more Sammy Watkins. I'd like to see more Sammy Watkins working on his routes, which he did, you know, fairly heavily chronicled during the OTAs and minicamp. I want to see more Sammy Watkins, and in particular, I want to see how Sammy Watkins can help the quarterbacks get better. How can he make EJ get better? Jay Harris, our producer, will be there at training camp, probably watch every single practice like I do. Jay, is there any one thing or a couple of things that you're most interested in keeping an eye on when training camp opens up?
Well, besides Sammy Watkins, and we saw this during the OTAs and minicamp, a guy like Chris Hogan, I mean, really exploded and just was probably their best receiver during those sessions. I'd like to see that and continue, you know, not just through practices, but in the games as well. Here's a guy that's on the verge of those wide receivers. They brought in some. It's going to be a tough battle for a guy like him and TJ Graham. So maybe outside of Sammy Watkins, the other wide receiver battles are what I'm looking at as well.
Yeah, good one. Mark Gaughan of the Buffalo News, yesterday's paper, and I actually read it today, the Sunday Buffalo News did a training camp preview, and I thought Mark Gaughan did an outstanding job of, in a kind of a condensed, boiled-down fashion. Well, first of all, he went through the entire 90-man roster, which is pretty impressive, with comments on each of them, but sort of highlighted some of the battles, including the wide receiver battles, and laid it out. And I'm trying to think from memory here. I think Mark had it, Woods and Sammy would be the starters. Mike Williams would come in a lot. Marquise Goodwin would obviously get some playing time. And Chris Hogan probably at the bottom end of the wide receiver depth chart. But that's the wide receiver mix in general is, I think, something to watch. And the battle for jobs at wide receiver is going to be something to watch as we hit training camp. Let us know what you think. Where do your eyes go first when you watch a training camp practice this year, whether it's this Sunday's first practice or a little bit later on? What do you look at first? What's going to be the first thing that you're going to keep an eye on at Bills training camp? Harvey in East Aurora, welcome to the show, Harvey. How are you doing tonight?
I'm just great. Hey, look, I'll tell you what I would be looking at. I'm looking at the backfield and the receiver core, and I think we have a good receiver core. You know, Woods, Graham, Hogan, obviously Sammy is the new guy, and Chandler, what's our tight end's name, Chandler. But in the backfield, you got Jackson and Spiller, who could both run and catch. The one element, and you were just talking about fullbacks a moment ago, I think we've got a little bit of a secret weapon that we haven't utilized, and I think that's in Frank Summers. Last year he caught for a touchdown. He didn't play many. He didn't have very many touches. But I think he rushed for a little short of an average of 4 yards. And he can block, he can run, and he can catch. And I believe that that instrument certainly has the possibility of throwing some guesswork into the other team's defense. Just wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, I like Frank Summers. I think he's a traditional fullback, and he caught one touchdown and ran for one touchdown. I'm looking at the numbers here, had 12 carries and caught 7 passes. But I think, and this is one of the things to watch at camp, I don't have the answer to this. There's a chance, I believe, that Booby Dixon could fill that role in a different sort of body type, but fill that role as a power back, a blocking back maybe if they ever want to run I formation, catch the ball out of the backfield. He's just a tough runner and save a roster spot that way and get some good special teams work out of Booby Dixon. I'm going to keep an eye on that. We'll see as the camp goes along whether that could happen. Not, you know, do you need a bona fide fullback, dedicated fullback on the roster? Maybe you don't. Maybe you don't if you have weapons that you want to use on the outside, too. So that's worth watching. And I fully appreciate Frank Summers' work last year and what he's able to provide. But they may be able to get similar work from Booby Dixon and save a roster spot. Sean has an idea from Florida. Sean, welcome. You're on the air. If you were to go to a Bills training camp practice, where would your eyes go first this summer?
Hey, Murph, I don't think I'll be able to go for camp coming all the way down from the Sunshine State. I wish I could.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got the coverage on the radio show every night from camp and on the website, so you can kind of feel plugged in that way.
Oh, thank you very much. I'll be looking forward to listening to the daily things that happen there. My question is, about the receiver position. I feel like we're very loaded there with the depth behind there, and I'm kind of curious as to how it's going to play out in the sense of how many they might want to keep for the 53-man roster. You know, I don't know, based on the history, how many they usually like to keep around five or something maybe, but we have so many, I just don't know how it's going to shake out. And I think a lot of the camp, it's going to come down with their how well some of the receivers who are in that borderline, how it's going to shake out. So I just wanted to hear what you thought.
All right. Yeah.
That.
Good question, Sean. Thanks. And, you know, typically, as you said, it's five or maybe six receivers. I believe they broke camp last year with six receivers. So let's go through it. Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods, Mike Williams is three. Marquise Goodwin is four. And now let's say you have two more spots to give. Who gets them? Marcus Easley with his special teams contributions, leading tackler on special teams last year. T.J. Graham with a couple of years of experience, and we know that he can make plays. He's not a fan favorite these days maybe, but he can make plays. Chris Hogan coming off that great spring camp when he looked so good. Now you're up to seven, and there's still some notable names. Ramses Barden, who's played in the league a little bit. Kevin Elliott, a tallish receiver who's been a favorite of the coaching staff here for a couple of years. So there are going to be some interesting choices to make there. And the choice between five and six will be among the most interesting choices they're going to have to make. It's definitely something to keep an eye on, Sean, when the Bills get to training camp. Let's take another call here from Dom in DePue. Hello, Dom. Welcome. Where would your eyes go if you were able to watch a Bills training camp this year?
I'm going to be focusing on the first part of my comments is how they're going to distribute the long ball. We know we've got this Goodwin, and I'm wondering who are going to be their other long ball threats besides Goodwin. That's the first one. And just off topic a little bit, you're an insider. With this, with the players with this lawsuit with these prescription drugs, these teams, who do you think the suppliers were, the trainers or the team physicians giving these guys these pain pills? Because all these teams, obviously, according to the suit, were doing it. You think it was the trainers or the team doctors?
I don't know. I don't know, Dom. Yeah. I don't know. And I think that's something that will probably come out in the lawsuit. But I don't know where the pain pills came from. I don't know if they were, you know, legitimately prescribed by doctors. Or, like, I would imagine that's the way it has to work. You can't but I don't know. Honestly, I don't know where the pain pills would come from. Long ball. Sammy Watkins, I think, is a candidate, and we saw a little bit of that in training camp. We all know what Marquise Goodwin looks like streaking down the field, catching the deep pass. I think Robert Woods has that kind of speed that he can get open. T.J. Graham over the past has demonstrated. So you're on to something there, Dom. You know, keeping an eye on who gets the long ball, how much is the long ball a facet of their game moving forward? At least will they show it during training camp? Something to keep an eye on. The quarterbacks and rookies are going to be here at One Bills Drive starting Wednesday of this week. They'll arrive here just a couple of days before the Bills report to training camp in Pittsburgh. All quarterbacks, all rookies, first-year players, and some other select players will be here for some training work at One Bills Drive on Wednesday. And then all the players show up at St. John Fisher for the start of training camp on Friday. It's an exciting time at One Bills Drive with some interesting battles. We'll revisit the question, where would your eyes go when you attend a Bills training camp practice this summer? We'll open up phone lines again as the night goes along. Going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about, believe it or not, the San Francisco 49ers. They just closed their stadium, Candlestick Park, their longtime home, the other day, getting set to move into Levi's Stadium in suburban Bay Area. And we'll talk with Daniel Brown, who's a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, about what went on this past weekend, the Legends of Candlestick game, and what awaits them in Levi's Stadium. That's coming up next. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Back live from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, back after a couple of weeks off. And this got my attention over the weekend in San Francisco at legendary Candlestick Park. They had a special flag football game, the Legends of Candlestick, the final football event at the old stadium on the bay in San Francisco Bay. On the line with us, a gentleman who covered that game for the San Jose Mercury News, Daniel Brown. Daniel, thanks for being on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, I've been to Candlestick probably a half dozen times over the years, Daniel. Is the place at the end, maybe even for a long time, has been kind of a dump, but there have to be fond memories of that stadium for 49er fans, huh?
Well, that's the thing. I think Joe Montana, who played in that flag football game and was kind of the ringleader, spoke to the crowd afterwards, and he said what you said, like, it's dumb. It's not a great stadium, but, you know, the memories that that team made there for all those dynasty years, and Montana the Clark for the catch against the Cowboys, and all the records that Jerry Rice set, and the five Super Bowl teams, that's what's going to be remembered about the Candlestick era more than the crumbling old stadium and elevators that don't work and rotten playing service. All those things are kind of forgotten Saturday night.
I heard Eddie DeBartolo, the former owner, on a Sirius radio interview today, and he was talking about how the players loved it, and I'm thinking they could not have loved the amenities here. I mean, I've been in that home locker room at Candlestick. There was not, especially by today's standards, there was not a whole lot special about that part of the building, was there?
No, it was. I mean, it's incredibly cramped, especially now. You look around the modern stadiums and the amount of room that these guys have and should have. Right, these are huge human beings getting paid a lot of money to go out and be prepared to go to battle. And the Candlestick, I mean, right up until last year, they were kind of squeezing in there, towels thrown over each other's heads, and you know, there's no place to walk, no place to stand. So the new stadium, Levi Stadium, is a very welcome sight, except for those who have the nostalgia for the old place.
Yeah, well, nostalgia, I would imagine, reigned on Saturday night for the Legends of Candlestick game, and you were even there on Friday where they had a little bit of a practice for the players involved on Friday, huh?
Yeah, that was the Friday practice was the first hint that this was not some these guys were not mailing it in. I was really impressed with the fact that they loved to be there. They loved to be around each other again. They had Jerry Rice and Steve Young and Joe Montana and Jeff Garcia, Roger Craig, Dwight Clark. I mean, they really did get all the greats back. And just watching them interact with each other, even Montana and Young, who had those famous quarterback rivalries and didn't always get along during their playing days, you know, it was a really happy time for those guys. And then when the game started Saturday, you know, the question is, you know, these creaky 50-year-old ex-NFL players going to put on much of a show, and they could really play. I mean, Montana looked like Montana, just kind of scanning the field and making the right throw, and Jerry Rice has always took pride in staying in shape, and that was still the case. He was flying up and down the field. So, you know, it was neat. I give credit to them for getting into the event and treating it really sincerely.
And they had a team of all-stars they played against, including former Dolphins quarterback Dan Marino.
Right, Dan Marino, Drew Bledsoe, Tim Brown. Those guys all looked pretty good, too. From what the organizers said, if they were to be believed, they had to turn players away. They were getting calls from guys saying, hey, I want to play, too. Because those guys, if they missed it during their actual playing career, if they missed their chance to play with Marino or to play against Montana or to settle a score with Steve Young, for whatever reason, this was their chance. So guys flocked from around the country to come be part of this, and they literally had to turn guys away who were saying, you know, for example, Anthony Carter, who had a huge playoff game for the Vikings against the Niners at Candlestick Park in an upset. I think it might have been 88 or 89. Uh-huh. He wanted to come do it again. You know, he wanted to come play. And we're going to had to say, sorry, our rosters are full. So it was that kind of weekend.
And what I read about it, it was what you might expect for summertime weather at Candlestick Park. It was kind of chilly, right? Just like the old Giants games.
Kind of chilly, kind of blustery. So that was kind of neat. I mean, I was down on the field for most of the game, down on the sidelines, and the wind was howling. So it was interesting to me to see that Marino and Bledsoe could still kind of rifle the ball through the wind. Dave Craig was one of the other quarterbacks. He looked just fine. So, yeah, it was kind of a fitting ending. And you know, if the game was rigged, it didn't look like it, but the final play was certainly scripted, organized, and Montana had concluded that there was only one guy who should catch the last touchdown at Candlestick Park, and it wasn't Dwight Clark or Jerry Rice or John Taylor. It was he picked Eddie DeBartolo.
Wow.
So for the game-winning touchdown pass, as time expired, they all kind of let, you know, the defense kind of let it all happen, but Eddie DeBartolo kind of snuck on the field to the surprise of fans, and Montana threw this short little 2-yard lob, and everybody crossed their fingers that this 76-year-old ex-owner would make the catch, and he did, and the place went nuts. So that was a scripted ending, and they got what they wanted because he caught the ball, the referee signaled touchdown, and time went off the clock, and then they carried their their owner off the field on the shoulders like a movie.
Storybook ending. And the crowd was sizable, right? 25, 30,000 folks?
Yeah, I would say, you know, organizers said 30,000. I think most would guess a little less than that, but not that much less. And those who were there went bonkers from start to finish.
What happens to Candlestick Park now?
You know, they're going to need some more events there, and there's no more football stuff. But the one thing they're kind of crossing their fingers for is the Beatles played their last concert at Candlestick Park. That's one of the venues claimed to fame. Paul McCartney has told city officials, hey, you know, let me play there one last time. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it hasn't been completely ruled out yet. So that's something to watch for. And then at some point, they're just going to blow the place up. I mean, it's near a I think the plan for that land is to become a housing development. You know, the Niners have a brand new place to play, and it's pretty far from Candlestick Park, so they don't need that land for football reasons anymore. I think it's going to become housing right there by the bay.
Hey, Daniel, I want to get to the new stadium in a second, but I did see a quote from Eddie DeBartolo who talked about issues and quirks at Candlestick. The Candlestick, but he said it had character and personality. How would you describe the character and personality of Candlestick Park in a football sense?
Well, that's good. I mean, Montana's big issue with the place was he said that because it was a baseball venue too, that especially in those early season games, the dirt from the infield, when it was so windy, you know, regardless of the weather, it was windy in Candlestick. The wind would blow in your face, and the quarterback would drop back and get a big gust of infield dirt in their face. So that was some of the character they talk about.
Yeah.
When the tide was in, the field would get soggy because the water level under the field would kind of raise a little bit. So that was an issue they had to deal with. They were calling for characters at Candlestick Park. I think that's going to be one of the casualties of moving to the new place is all these kind of, you know, whatever the San Francisco version is of blue-collar fans, I don't think they're going to make the trip to the very pricey Levi Stadium. So a lot of those colorful characters from the Candlestick days, that made the place fun, too. I mean, it was crazy loud at times at that place. So, you know, wasn't that well-designed, wasn't that beautiful, but they played some great football there.
Talking with Daniel Brown of the San Jose Mercury News. He was there on Saturday night for the Legends of Candlestick game, the final football game at Candlestick Park, and now the move to Levi Stadium. Daniel, give us a sense of the geography, and you've referenced it a couple of times. The new stadium is in Santa Rosa. How far away is – or Santa Clara, rather. How far away is that from the
– Right. It's in Santa Clara. It's roughly 40 minutes south of San Francisco, maybe 35, 40 minutes south of San Francisco, and maybe 20 minutes north of San Jose.
Okay.
So – it's really a lot more in the heart of the Silicon Valley, where all those where all the big money guys are now, so that there's a lot more corporate sponsorship going to the stadium, this Levi Stadium. They've really put an emphasis. I haven't seen the inside yet. I've seen it from the outside. It's terrific. They've put a lot of emphasis on making it for the Silicon Valley crowd. It's very high-tech in terms of the scoreboard and the internet access and the kind of displays that you'll see around the stadium when you go to the concession stands. One of the cool things they've done at the stadium, and other stadiums have done this too around the NFL, is they've incorporated a kind of a Hall of Fame museum type place to salute the teams. You know, it's got this great history with the five Super Bowls and all the Hall of Famers. There was never anything like that at Candlestick. There was just kind of the numbers up in the rafters up around the top bowl of the stadium. Now they're going to have an exhibit where there's jerseys, and I think some of the Super Bowl trophies will be there. Teams can get a sense of the past year-round. It's not even on game days. It's going to be open all year-round. So that's kind of a new, cool new feature at the stadium.
I read somewhere that the you mentioned it, 45-minute drive. It's about 38 miles from south of San Francisco, the farthest distance of any NFL stadium from its home city. How's that gone over with San Francisco fans?
Yeah, you know, this has been so long in the works that I think they've kind of come to grips with it. What's the last stage of the grief process? Acceptance.
Yeah.
you know, at the beginning when there was the rumblings that they were going to build this thing in San Jose, Dianne Feinstein, the former mayor of San Francisco, led an effort to say, look, you can't take the team out of San Francisco and still call it the San Francisco 49ers. And it's not a reasonable thing to say, but I think everybody's come to grips with the fact that they're not going to play in San Francisco. They're not going to change the name to the Santa Clara 49ers. I don't think anybody wants that. So it's a little strange, but, you know, the people have just kind of learned to live with it. Certainly the team is still identified with San Francisco. It helps a little bit. The team has trained in Santa Clara for many, many years. Mm-hmm. That's been their home base, their headquarters. They practice during the week in Santa Clara, so that's made it a tad less awkward.
Do you envision, or has anybody done any studies on, you know, do they lose fans from the San Francisco Bay Area and maybe pick up some in Santa Clara in this move? What do you think? Season ticket holders?
I've seen the studies. You know, I can't recall the numbers off the top of my head. I think it's nothing dramatic either way. I think it's a handful of, I think they expect people who are coming from San Francisco to go to Candlestick. I think most of them have proven willing to go to the Santa Clara Stadium, too. I think a lot of the season ticket holders, you know, renewed for the new stadium. So there are some changes. I can't remember, but it was nothing too jarring.
Well, the Super Bowl's coming there in February of 2016, so obviously yeah. By then they'll be all settled in. It sounds like it was kind of a magical night at Candlestick a couple of nights ago, Daniel.
Yeah, I got to say, I went into it with a little bit of skepticism, thinking I was going to see a bunch of old guys mail in an effort, get the check, and leave, and it was anything but that. It was a reminder that these guys love what they do, and I think they love being with each other, and it was really, really neat. I think some of the guys wanted to show they could still play. I mean, Roger Craig was out there going crazy, high-stepping, catching passes, and you know, they did it all with a smile on their face, too. They were laughing. They were joking. I don't recall anybody pulling a hamstring, so that might have been the upset of the night. So Rice and Montana won last night. That's not too bad.
Pretty good. Daniel, thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight to talk about it. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Daniel Brown covers football and the Niners for the San Jose Mercury News, and he was there for the Legends of Candlestick game on Saturday night when Joe Montana threw three touchdown passes, including the final one, the game winner, to former Niners owner Eddie DeBartolo for the game-winning touchdown. Take a break. Come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Daniel Brown of the San Jose Mercury News. Sounds like kind of a pretty cool night, the flag football game at the Candlestick Park. The place, it's kind of a dump. And like I said to Daniel, I've been there probably half a dozen times covering Bills games over the years, and it wasn't getting any better, that's for sure. It was legendary, the soggy field. He talked about it at high tide, and they were right on the edge of the bay, San Francisco Bay, and at high tide, the field was noticeably soggy. To get to the press box, you had to, not unlike Ralph Wilson Stadium, but you had to walk essentially right through the crowd, going down the steps or up the steps on your way there, right through the crowd to get to the press box before and after the game. The end zone was a mess. The fans right on top of you. I recall doing a live shot after some Bills games where, you know, the fans are screaming right in your ear. Just a tough place to work. And a tough place, I'm sure, for players to play. The visiting locker room was a mess, cramped, crowded. The home locker room, not much better, right across the hall. Not a nice place, but obviously the place was built on the memories they had there of some pretty fantastic finishes and some great 49er teams, and that's what they celebrated. So, again, thanks for Daniel Brown for joining us tonight. Thanks to Daniel Brown to talk about that. A couple of other NFL notes tonight. Jimmy Graham, who is battling with the Saints on whether he's a tight end or a wide receiver, he continues to fight that he's a franchise wide receiver and should get the franchise tag for that instead of tight end. Adam Schefter of ESPN says Graham is closing in on a deal with the Saints that will pay him big money. Two sides nearing a long-term deal will make him the highest-paid tight end in NFL history. And the Bills getting set with their quarterbacks and rookies, along with first-year players, other select players, going to be here at the One Bills Drive Complex on Wednesday with training camp opening Friday. We've got a one-on-one interview with offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett up on the website right now. Just went up today. Interview we did a couple of weeks ago. We spent a lot of time in that interview talking about E.J. Manuel and the improvement expected in the passing game. In fact, we asked Nathaniel Hackett, if they are going to get better in the passing game, where will that improvement come from?
I think the biggest thing is always the quarterback. I mean, when you get a quarterback in his second year and keeping the same quarterback throughout the year, I think that's going to dramatically help us. I think being familiar with the system, being familiar with the guys that he's been out there with, that's going to dramatically help him also. And just because he's always going to have that confidence. It's not going to be something new to him. He's going to understand his reads. He's going to be able to focus on the details, focus on how the defense is responding, and he's going to be able to go about that the right way and just slowly take what he's given. I mean, we watch a lot of guys in the offseason, you know, and that's what great quarterbacks do. They take what they're given, and that's something that EJ just has to keep learning and keep trusting.
Have you seen signs through the OTAs and the minicamp that EJ is making progress?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the good thing is that you see the initial, okay, he sees it, and then you can see him actually recognize that it's not there, and then finding a running back. He did it a couple times today. He did it a couple times a couple days ago. I mean, it's as he feels comfortable in understanding, that's good. It's good to give it to a running back. That'll allow you to now know when somebody's open down the field because it'll be even clearer, and you're making them cover CJ and Fred and Booby and all those guys.
Nathaniel Hackett, you can watch the entire interview up on our website right now at buffalobills.com, a one-on-one with the Bills offensive coordinator. You hear the faith in his voice about E.J. Manuel. We've talked earlier in the show tonight about where your eyes will go when you attend your first Bills training camp practice this summer. A lot of folks saying E.J. Manuel, and, you know, you can't blame him. He is the big question mark, obviously. But you hear in Nathaniel Hackett's answer how much faith, how much confidence they have in E.J. Manuel and what he saw in the OTAs and minicamp, what he expects to see moving forward. A tweet from Jeremy when we asked the question, where do your eyes go first when you attend your first Bills practice? Jeremy tweets in, quarterback. Jess Kinsey tweets in, what's up with Alonzo? Also Watkins. Joe Cerro tweets in, interior offensive line. That's where his eyes will go. And Jimmy O. Snap tweets in, the gift shop. The merchandise store. Okay, well, a lot of people come to camp for that. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Bills training camp. Robert Klemko is in town, a reporter for Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback website. We'll talk with him about Bills camp, and then also next hour, Mike Carey, NFL official turned NFL analyst on the NFL on CBS. That's the next hour. Stick around. One more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop CJ Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it? The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show here until 9 o'clock tonight. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Mike Carey, longtime NFL official. He's now moved over to the media side. He's going to be with the NFL on CBS this year, covering officiating NFL officiating issues on the network on CBS. We'll talk with him at 8:30 tonight. Bills go to training camp on Friday. Players report Friday. First practice on Sunday. The moving has already begun. The roadies are packing up the pianos and moving down the thruway to St. John Fisher College as we speak. They started moving equipment today. Joining us on the line, a gentleman who covers pro football and is in town covering the Bills getting set for training camp. He's a pro football writer for Sports Illustrated. He was also a pro football writer earlier on for USA Today covering the Redskins and the Ravens. A contributor for Peter King's, the MMQB.com website. Robert Klemko joined us on the air. Robert, thanks for coming on with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Did you really come to Buffalo to watch moving vans unload equipment trucks in Rochester? Is there a story there that we're missing?
No, it sounds crazy, but I think the idea is that if you hang around a franchise when they're going from a team facility to their training camp, especially, you know, these few that still travel, you can learn a lot about their organizational structure and just kind of what makes them tick.
Interesting. And you've been here, you're in Buffalo now, right?
Yeah, still here.
Are you going to stay through the week until the players arrive in Rochester Friday?
I think I'll be here until about Thursday, and then the big guy, Peter King, replaces me. This is the first camp he'll hit on his tour.
I got you. Well, and that gives me an opportunity to talk about the website, the MMQB.com. It's just about, what, a year old now, the website, Robert?
Yeah, just a little bit over that.
I'm telling you, it is great. It is required reading for any pro football fan, and it's not just Peter King. He's assembled a good crew, including yourself. You guys do a great job of putting together great think pieces about the NFL and pro football, and it is very much appreciated in this quarter.
Well, thank you so much. When we started it, the mandate was to have story ideas and execute them the way that nobody's ever done before. And I don't know that we've, you know, completely lived up to that in the way we envisioned, but, you know, we like what we've done so far, and we're really looking forward to year two.
How much was the MMQB, how much was that was Peter King's vision, or obviously he had input from others, including yourself, I would think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, people are surprised when I tell them how much impact he has and how much voice he has on the site. I mean, for instance, like 2 weeks before, it was summer last year, 2 weeks before we launched, he looked at the website design and said, I don't like that. And they scrapped it and did a whole new one for him. The guy reads every story. He edits every story. And then on top of that, he's writing 4 articles a week and selling our advertising. So it's all Peter King's vision.
It's got to be great for a young pro football writer like yourself to have that kind of a forum, but also that kind of freedom to write longer pieces, to devote time and not have to generate material every day like many reporters have to do, beat reporters. That you were one of them, I guess, earlier on, huh?
I was. I did that for only a year. This is my second year covering the league, and it's a tremendous opportunity. I do feel tremendously lucky just to be able to come here and watch the Bills move in instead of sweating, you know, what kind of practice squad guy they're going to pick up.
Yeah. Robert Klemko, our guest, the pro football writer for Sports Illustrated and contributor for the MMQB.com. So in one day, what, if anything, have you learned about the Bills organization as you watch them pack up boxes and move down to Rochester?
Yeah. Well, I think right off the bat, you learn that these guys, you know, take a lot of care in getting everything right. I mean, there was a time when it was efficient to only bring part of the, you know, facility experience to the camp and the college. And then they, at a certain point, you know, several years ago, said, we're just going to pack up this whole thing and replicate the whole experience just an hour and a half down the road. So there's no expense spared. And I think they put a lot of value in isolating these players and making it about football 24/7, as opposed to a lot of these teams who are now switching to just the training camps and the facility, you know, where there are still potential distractions, you know, guys driving it from their homes as opposed to living in a dorm room.
Yeah. I don't have the I guess I should have done this beforehand, but what are the numbers? How many teams actually go off-site now for training camp? It's got to be down to about, what, a 10, maybe dozen teams do it?
I have to double-check this, but I believe the number is 9.
Okay.
Ever since the Jets and Giants didn't leave for training camp after the lockout and then just decided that they would stay home after that.
Yeah. I mean, there's an expense involved, and you've seen that, I'm sure, just today watching the Bills pack up and move.
Oh, yeah. Just, I mean, with a background in office moving a little bit and seeing how some of this works, I mean, you're talking about a tremendous amount of money to pack up a football team. I mean, they moved the whole weight room into this college. That alone is a task. But then you consider that they're bringing all of the video equipment. If a coach wants a tape from, you know, 2005 Falcons game, like he's going to have that at the college, which is, you know, something unique to these few teams that are still doing it.
And Robert, and you can appreciate this, I'm sure, and I know most fans don't care about this, but here at One Bills Drive, everybody, not everybody, most departments are moving to media relations, marketing, merchandising, sales. The department I work in, digital media, we're all getting set to move it. So it's a big deal to move the entire operation, even though it's only an hour and a half away.
Certainly. And I think that this college is uniquely prepared for it. I mean, I took a tour of the place today, earlier, and in the several mini camps I've seen where teams do go off away from the facility, everything's really spread out, and there's a lot of walking to be done. But at Fisher, I mean, everything's right there in that little triangle. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Robert, what do you think teams, the 9 or 10 teams that still pack up and move out for training camp, what do they gain from that experience?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think the guys are just immersed 24/7. In football. So I think it's especially effective when you have a younger team where some of the younger guys don't know any better and don't yet hate the training camp experience,
mm-hmm.
Like a lot of veterans do. So when you have a lot to learn, I think it's an ideal environment, and a lot of the, you know, old school coaches in the NFL still agree.
Robert Klemko, our guest, pro football writer for Sports Illustrated. He's covering the Bills' move to St. John Fisher College this week. When will you post this article, Robert? Later this week?
I believe it will be Monday morning, but don't hold me to that.
All right, we'll be looking for that. I want to ask you, you obviously came here, you cover the league. Do you have any preseason thoughts about the Buffalo Bills on the field, aside from packing up and moving equipment boxes down to Rochester? What do you think their prospects are for the upcoming season?
Sure. I mean, there's so much to say about the Bills in terms of the hope for the future, positives, but also the speed bumps that, I mean, most agree they're going to face this year. In the first 6 weeks, they play the Patriots, Bears, Chargers, and Lions. That's what jumped out to me, you know, right off the bat. You're playing probably four of the top 10 quarterbacks in football in the first 6 weeks. So that, to me, is those performances are going to define your season. I'm really excited to see EJ Manuel coming off the injury plague season, you know, in which he put up pretty good numbers, though had, you know, a couple of disastrous games. It's interesting to hear him talk about how he's going to play smarter football, but you really don't know until you see a guy going for that, you know, three extra yards on third down. You know, is he going to make the smart choice or not? You can't tell until it happens. I mean, look at Michael Vick right now, you know, still making some of the bad decisions he swore off back in, you know, September 2004. So I'm very excited to see the progress of Manuel, and very sad and that football lost Kiko Alonso for however long it will be.
Yeah, man, that happened a couple of weeks ago now, and that's a big blow. But it is a defense that appears to be pretty deep across the board, including at Kiko's spot, and a defense that should get something, I would think, out of the new coordinator Jim Schwartz this year.
Sure. I mean, you know, 57 sacks and 23 interceptions is nothing to sneeze at. Obviously, it was a very aggressive defense. They still gave up, I think it was over 24 points per game. So I think that says that they're taking chances and they're capitalizing on some of them and they're missing on some of them. I think the plan to put Kiko at weak side linebacker where he could, you know, avoid getting hit by centers and guards and just kind of clean up was, you know, probably a recipe for 200 tackles for that guy. And now you kind of have to retool that and figure out who you're even going to put as your starting three linebackers in preseason.
Robert Klemko, our guest, a pro football writer for Sports Illustrated and the MMQB.com. And as part of your offseason coverage, Robert, a couple of weeks ago, you spent time at the NFL Rookie Symposium outside Cleveland. And you wrote, it's the most elaborate and expensive orientation in American professional sports. Tell me what you saw down there, what you heard down there at the orientation.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I wrote, it's very big. They bring in a lot of guys with a lot of different expertise to talk to the rookies. For instance, this year was the first year Dante Stallworth was invited to participate. You know, people in this region will remember Dante being a member of the Browns in 2009 when he killed a man drunk driving in Miami and did 24 days in jail for it and was suspended for a year. His story very complicated, and he told that to the rookies. And basically, the week is about leaving an impression on these guys, not only what a huge opportunity they have, but all the ways that they could squander it and all the ways that they can avoid squandering it.
Is it mostly behavioral issues? Is that mostly what they deal with?
I think so. It's really focuses on making a lot of the right choices. You talk to some of the players, and they were moved by, you know, talks about drug addiction and DUIs, but I think what a lot of them really appreciated getting from this is the financial advice. Right about now and earlier in the offseason is when guys are hiring, you know, marketing guys, financial managers who are either being, you know, pushed on them by their agents or, you know, coming independently from all different directions. And I think it's a really confusing time for young men who, you know, were quote-unquote amateurs just a few months ago and really have been prepping for this season and running nonstop ever since, you know, the beginning of last college football season. They went straight from bowl games to all-star games to combine prep to mini camp, and now they're just kind of settling in at home for a couple weeks before these training camps, and this is the most vulnerable time for them in terms of, you know, guys looking to get in their pockets.
And speaking of getting in their pockets, you're right that money is a constant theme, both making it and preserving their money. I would imagine the players do need some counseling in that regard.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's probably one of the biggest problems that the NFL recognizes that its players face, just what to do with those first few checks. And I think it can be so important to their long-time job security. I mean, we know just from the statistics that over half of NFL players go broke within, I believe it's 5 years of leaving the league. I think one long-term goal for the NFL is to really cut that number down.
Robert, what's the level of attention from the rookies at the various speakers and the things that go on at the symposium? Are they just putting in the time, or do you detect that they're paying attention to what they're told?
Yeah. Well, it's like one player told me, I think that the guys who need to be listening aren't listening, and the guys that, you know, don't have to listen are listening. It's like, you know, the kids in school who are right. going to get straight A's, they're sitting in the front of the class. But I think everybody, you'd be a fool to not get something out of it just because of everything they're throwing at you. So, there are guys, you know, there are guys sleeping in the back because I guess it's a long day. And the NFL is not going to hold your hand through this thing. If you want to get something out of it, you're going to.
And the symposium ends for both the rookies from each conference with a visit to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Are the rookies mm-hmm. impressed by that? What's their reaction to the busts and the displays at the Hall of Fame?
Yes, it's funny. You know, some of them aren't really interested in the NFL history of the 50s and 60s and 70s, and their frame of reference kind of begins with Lawrence Taylor in the late 80s. And then others of them are football historians. Linebacker for the Carolina Panthers, Coney Ealy, was taking his group of rookies through the bus room and rattling off colleges and stats for guys from the 50s and 60s.
Wow.
So I think it's a mixed bag in terms of, you know, what you get out of the experience, just like the whole symposium. At that point, you know, day four, guys are ready to go home. They can smell the summer coming. But for a lot of them who are appreciative of the history of the league, I think it was an eye-opening experience.
There's one more post that you had at MMQB I want to ask you about, Robert, and this goes back a couple of months to the day of the draft, May 8th, when you wrote the May draft is a bust. Do you still believe that, having lived through those 3 days of the draft back in May?
Well, I think the one positive that I didn't consider at the time is that a lot of these guys who had different college schedules than most were able to graduate because that draft was pushed back. You know, I'd love to know exactly how many, but that's something that the league pointed out in our conversations with them subsequent to that article. I do believe that, you know, the main motivation for pushing the draft back is to make the NFL season relevant for the entire year instead of having that longer dead period between the draft and mini camps. I think that's proof of that is where they're talking about moving it to different cities, extending it to another day, you know, possibly right. even 4 days. I don't like the fact that the NFL kind of tries to stomp on all the other leagues' attention, you know, the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, for this event that, you know, used to be done in 2 days quietly. And it's now extravaganza where we're speculating for 4 days about draft picks that most people know nothing about and have no idea how they'll, how they'll have success or whether or not they'll have success in the NFL. I think it's summed up best by people who call it the silly season.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us writers are a little bit tired of it.
I agree. I am too. But I think it's here to stay, I fear, Robert.
Yeah, well, the only bonus is that they might move the draft to my hometown of Chicago, so I'll be looking forward to that.
There you go. Robert, thank you very much for spending time with us tonight. I hope to see you around the next few days. And come on down to Pittsburgh. Come on down to Bills Camp when things get going if you get a chance.
Definitely, and I'll be finding you for restaurant recommendations here.
There's a few restaurants and night spots in Pittsburgh that you should know about. Actually, Peter King knows all the best places. Just go to him. Thanks, Robert.
Yep. Thank you.
Robert Klemko is a writer, pro football writer for Sports Illustrated, a contributor to the MMQB.com, and he is here in town covering the Bills as they pack things up and move down the thruway to St. John Fisher College in Rochester. Our thanks to him for joining us. As he said, his article about the Bills' move to training camp And the process should be, what do you say, next Monday or Tuesday, it should be up on the website, the MMQB.com. Really good website, Peter King's website about pro football and the NFL, and always some interesting stuff there. I look forward to reading Robert's take on the Bills moving down the thruway to St. John Fisher College. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We are 4 days away from our first show at St. John Fisher College. Friday night, we'll be there 7 to 9 p.m., the Bills report day on Friday. Nothing on Saturday, testing, physical testing, and players kind of getting settled in. And then on Sunday, the first practice of training camp, Sunday night at 6 o'clock. We talked tonight earlier about what you're looking for when you go to training camp. Where will your eyes go when you take in your first or maybe only training camp for the Bills, training camp practice this year? We've talked a lot about the quarterback. We talked a lot about the offense in general. We talked the other day with Nathaniel Hackett, the Bills offensive coordinator, before the Bills broke away for a couple of weeks here. We sat down and did a one-on-one interview with Nathaniel Hackett about E.J. Manuel, about the offense, and the pace of the offense, the up-tempo pace of the offense. The Bills have added some players, obviously, on the offensive side of the ball, some offensive linemen. They've added Sammy Watkins and others, some running backs. We asked Nathaniel Hackett, with the added depth they have on offense, is this team better suited now to maintain an up-tempo pace?
Without a doubt. I mean, you look at it last year, and we were putting guys in that had were playing their very first NFL game of their life, and we were trying to press people and utilize that. And I think now the quarterbacks that we have in that room have been with us for a year now. So I think that for them to be able to go out there, that's going to be just that starting point right there to say they're going to be able to, that's going to be comfortable for them. It's not going to be something, not only is it a new system, but it's not only a new time out on the field, but it's, hey, now this is what they do. This is what they've been training for. This is what they've been doing. It's part of them. And I think that's going to allow us not to have to slow it down as much. I mean, when Thad went in, when Jeff went in, it was, you know, that was their first game ever. And I think that anytime you do that, just like the first game with EJ, we wanted to, you know, make it a nice relaxed pace, and then we sped it up as he was in there for those first couple games. So I think anytime you have that quarterback that's rolling for a while, you can always keep the pace up.
And how important is pace to your offense?
Oh, I think quite a bit. Because you want to get those guys in a flow. You know, it's their game out there, and you want them to get a feel for how defenses are playing them. The linemen to understand how to block guys, the pass rush to slow down because they're having to rush the passer so much. So I think that is such a key thing, and anytime you can utilize a no-huddle aspect anywhere, it's always going to be helpful to you.
Nathaniel Hackett, the Bills offensive coordinator, talking about pace, and as he said, pace is quite a bit important to what they want to do. He says you want them to get a feel for how defenses are playing. And you also hear from Nathaniel Hackett the expectation that they should be able to handle an up-tempo offense better this year than they did last year, mostly because it's not the first time out on the field in this offense for E.J. Manuel or Thad Lewis or Jeff Toole, for that matter. It's a system that they played in last year. It's a tempo in which they tried to play last year. They've worked on it throughout the entire offseason, something that could not be said in particular for Thad Lewis last year, even for E.J. Manuel, who didn't have the entire offseason. So I think they're looking forward to keeping the pace up, to pushing the pace, and incorporating that as an important part of what they want to do offensively. I look forward to that, seeing how it works out. I think you'd be hard-pressed to say, and we talked about this a year ago, you know, what's the impact on the defense to have the offense out there for a lot of three and outs potentially or not a lot of time of possession. I don't think, based on last year, you could make the argument that hurt the Buffalo defense to have the up-tempo offense. Did they slow it down from time to time? Yes, they did, especially when, I think they needed to slow it down for E.J. Manuel. But they are committed, it appears, based on what Nathaniel Hackett says, they are committed to being up-tempo, fast-paced offense, and it sounds like they're committed to doing even more of it in the upcoming season. One of those questions that may start to get answered when the Bills hit training camp this Friday with the first practice on Sunday. And we had opened up the phone lines earlier. We still invite your responses. Where will your eyes go first if you attend a Bills practice this year? Do you look at the defense? Who's replacing Kiko Alonso? Who's replacing Jarris Byrd? Do you look at the quarterback? Obviously, a lot of eyes on E.J. Manuel. Do you look at the first rounder, Sammy Watkins, who they have invested so heavily in? We're taking phone calls on that tonight, tweets as well. Dean Kindig tweets in, I'll be watching what Jim Schwartz does with Preston Brown. I think he was brought in to be the long-term three-down middle linebacker, not Spikes. He continues, Spikes will be the run-stopping option for now, and Brown will be the nickel linebacker on passing situations. I think he may be onto something like that. A lot of positive comments on the part of the coaching staff about Preston Brown after the OTAs and minicamp. And a lot of playing time for Preston Brown in the OTAs and minicamp. So I think that's a guy to watch, his development and his usage. If they use him a lot in sub packages, I think that's a good sign for Preston Brown. If he gets a lot of snaps with the ones, I think that's a very good sign for Preston Brown. That's a guy definitely to keep an eye on at the mini camp or the training camp practices starting this Sunday night. Another tweet from Baypath, who tweets in, want to see how Jim Schwartz interacts with the defense. I think you'll see a guy definitely in charge of the defense based on what we saw in training camp. Definitely in charge. He seems to have a level head as far as calling in the defenses. Not a lot of shouting, not a lot of histrionics on the sideline, just good, solid, experienced defensive coaching. I think that's what you'll get. But it all opens up for us on Sunday night, the first practice of training camp and the practices that follow after that. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to talk with Mike Carey, longtime NFL official, who is now stepping over to the broadcast booth as an analyst for the NFL on CBS. He'll be on the line with us live when we return. Mike Carey. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here until 9 o'clock tonight with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Here all this week, 7 to 9 p.m. with training camp, our first training camp show coming up on Friday. The new season makes a big change for a longtime NFL official. 24 years in the league as an official, 19 of those as an NFL referee. Mike Carey has left the ranks of officiating to become a broadcaster. He is now going to be the NFL rules and officiating analyst for the NFL on CBS. Mike Carey joins us from his home in Southern California. Mike, thank you very much for coming on with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hi, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Your move begs the question. You're at the top of your profession as an NFL official. Why would you leave that to get into broadcasting?
Well, isn't it nice to go out on top?
Yeah.
You rarely ask. You know, it was an opportunity that I wasn't going to see the likes of for a long time. And it was a tough decision, but it feels good afterwards. I mean, be able to do basically what I did on the field, and that is try to explain to the fans in the easiest way to understand, to make it understandable, what exactly is happening on the field. And this is an opportunity to do it at a little better venue.
You know, and it's important, I think, that you mentioned that, explain to the fans. It strikes me that the best officials, referees in the NFL for that matter, are the ones who can communicate to the television audience and the fans in the stands is exactly what's going on. That probably goes a long way towards being regarded as a successful NFL official, I would think. Is that true?
Yeah, I think especially with the fans, and, you know, the game is nothing without the fans, and I'm a fan before I'm an official. And I just try to do what I would like to know. It's just, I mean, something technically would happen, you know, better explanation. Communication is the name of the game.
Mike Carey is our guest. He is moving over from the officiating ranks to the NFL on CBS. Mike, I think it's important for folks to know that you played the game, right? You played college football very successfully. How much did that factor into your success as an NFL official?
I think it's paramount. It's very difficult to be able to have the feel for the game without actually playing it. Now, there are some who've been very successful doing it, but it's a very, very small club of people who have officiated at a high level who have not played the game.
And you started officiating at just about as low a level as you could. Pop Warner games in San Diego, what, 40 years ago, huh?
Yes, and I'm not alone there. In order to graduate to the NFL, everybody starts at the Pop Warner level, and then go to junior varsity high school. There's a varsity high school, and if you're successful, you get up to Division One, and that's where the league starts to scout, just like the scout players.
When did you start to think of officiating as a possible job that you can make money doing that, Mike?
When the league called me.
Yeah.
I did it because I love football, and I wanted, as soon as I stepped off the field, I wanted to stay connected. And coaching was a difficult decision if I wanted to have a family and have a business. And a friend of mine who I played high school football with was doing it when I moved back home and started it. And it's just been the most rewarding thing that I've done.
24 years. And the first five, not as an official, you were a side judge the first 5 years. Is that right, Mike?
Yes, which was a great experience because it's all panic football, and so you learn how to capture the speed of the game downfield, and then when I get the opportunity to become a referee, it really has helped, especially being a side judge. The guys on the sideline have most of the communication with the coaches and the players, and that was a great experience for me there, too.
Mike, I've often wondered, and the league will do that sometimes, move the officials around from one officiating position to another. In your case, what was it that made them think that this side judge might make a good referee, and how does that take place, that move?
I think blind luck. I don't know. I got lucky. I told them that I had an interest in becoming a referee. I liked the challenge and the responsibility of administrating the game, and I did well on the test. You know, I could move, and they saw those things in a referee that they liked. I was fortunate to be able to be given that opportunity.
Mike Carey is our guest, former NFL official, now part of the NFL on CBS broadcast team. Mike, among your memorable games, a lot of people remember the Super Bowl between the Giants and the Patriots for really the one play when Eli Manning broke loose from a potential sack and fired the ball downfield to David Tyree, wound up as one of the game-winning plays. You've talked about that play in the past. Was it a close call as far as whether Eli was in the grasp and control of the defense?
Yeah, that was a very, very tough call. And if you recollect, you know, he just got swarmed. And I broke one of the basic mechanics of my position, and I had to run around the pocket to get a look. Because if I had to make a decision from where my position is supposed to be, I probably would have sacked him. But I got lucky, and I had enough speed to get around. And as I came around, he was breaking free. So That was a great one as a referee. And then, coincidentally, one of the other great games I had when I was a side judge, I had the 93 playoff game between the Bills and the Houston Oilers when you guys had the biggest comeback in NFL history.
I was going to ask you if you had any memorable Bills games. So you were on that crew here at then Rich Stadium. And when the Oilers, I mean, I know officials have to let the game play out, but when it's 35-3, as the side judge in that game, you had to be thinking, what time is my flight? It's time, you know, where am I going to be next week? You had to think it was over, right?
Well, if you do that, you don't last in the league very long because something weird happens at every game. And independent of what the score is, if it happens and you're not able to rule on it well, if you're distracted, they don't ask you back, right?
Yeah.
But that was, I think that was one of the things that happened to the Oilers, I think. They shut down and they weren't able to get the momentum back. Momentum is such an elusive quantity. You know?
Yeah. Mike, what, in your career as an official, what were some of the most difficult calls, not specific games, but just the calls, whether it's holding or pass interference, was there anything that you think is just difficult to officiate?
Well, any time you have multiple decisions on the same play, down deep, it's sometimes illegal contact, pass interference, catch, no catch, offensive pass interference. There are elements of each one of those things at the same time, and you've got to separate them in a very, very quick blink of the eye. That's one that stands out. It's a panic kind of situation. And as a referee, when you have what happens around the quarterback, you have to rule on pass fumble. You have to rule on somebody get a blow to the head, and you have maybe multiple tacklers coming in, high, low, helmet. Those can be very, very trying also. So it's just a matter of being able to slow the game down, process it, and make the best decision that you've been trained to do.
Mike, I have to confess, in recent years, maybe the last 4 or 5 years, I've become so confused as to what constitutes a legal catch anymore. And I think, you know, the league sometimes has changed the interpretation or the enforcement of the catch, no catch rule. Is that a problem for the NFL, do you think? And our fans, I know many fans who are frustrated. They can't tell what's a catch anymore sometimes.
You know, the game is evolving. And so what becomes catch and no catch is really important, especially because the passing game has become so big. They don't want a cheap turnover, and they don't want a cheap catch either. So those lines are being redefined. But I think you'll find in time that everybody agrees with what the league encapsulates as a catch and no catch. It's just, it's not the same as when you were growing up in Sandlot.
Right.
And so as we get to understand it as a fan, then you'll be able to rule it out yourself.
During your 24 years on the NFL field as an official, you saw replay come into the league. You saw the replay application change. Has that been a good development, and is it good for officiating? Is it good for officials to have instant replay looking over all their calls?
Well, the priority is making sure that whatever is implemented is good for the game. And then whatever happens to the officials, we just have to adapt or die, right? It's and I think it's good for the game. It's a double-edged sword. But the number one tenet for officials is to get the call right. And this really helps us do it in some of the most important plays on the field. Sometimes it kills momentum for a team, you know, but most of the time they get to choose whether they're going to challenge the play or not. So it's they're in control of their momentum, and that'll break in the game. You know, for the purist is not the most pleasant thing, but anybody who wants to see the right outcome, you have a better chance with replay, and with the current form, you have the best chance of it also.
Well, the current form, this year's form, includes input from the league officiating department in New York City. Are we moving towards a super eye in the sky where the officiating department in New York will rule on all replays?
Well, that remains to be seen. There's a big human element that you can't neglect. That three-dimensional look that is what happens live, and you get to use more than one sense, more than just your eyes. You hear things. That all those things kind of come into play. And when you look at it on film, you got to remember that's still just a two-dimensional medium. And in some areas it's great, in some areas it's a little blind. But to answer your question, I think you're going to see more technology in everything. We have it. That's what our phones were like 10 years ago.
Yep.
And I think anything that can enhance the game, if it makes the game better for the fan, that's what the league is going to employ.
Last thing, Mike, how is CBS going to use you? Will you be at game sites for, say, the Thursday night games or even on Sundays? Will you be in the studio as they use Mike Pereira on Fox? How do you think the nuts and bolts of this job will work?
Yes, on Sundays I'll be pretty much like Mike Pereira. I'll be in their New York studio, and they'll feed me in plays that they want comments on. On Thursdays, I will be in the booth with Jim Nantz and Phil Simms. And for at least the first four games, and depending on what the logistics lay out, many games after that, too.
Well, we look forward to seeing you on there. I know you're going to do a great job. We've always admired your work on the field and look forward to seeing you in the CBS broadcast crew this coming fall. Mike, thank you for being on with us tonight. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, John. Have a great season for you guys, too.
Thank you. Mike Carey, who has left the ranks of NFL officiating after 24 years to become part of the NFL on CBS broadcast team. Mike Carey will contribute to the NFL on CBS coverage on Sundays, and as he said, he'll be on site for at least the initial stages of Thursday night football on CBS this coming year. Mike Carey, former NFL official. We've got to take a break here. We'll come back and wrap things up in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Our thanks to Mike Carey for joining us on the show tonight. You know, Mike Carey, as an official, had the record for the most ejections, I believe, throughout the course of his career, and probably warranted, I would think. But a good official who is now, I think, going to make some real good contributions to the NFL on CBS. And as you heard him say, technology is going to be more prevalent, he believes, in officiating football games. They've got the change this year with the on-field referees being able to consult with the officiating departments in New York City even before they take a look at the play under the hood. It'll be interesting to see what sort of impact that has on replay decisions. And Mike Carey says there should be even more of that down the road in the future. I think he'll do a good job for the NFL on CBS, and we really appreciate him coming on the show with us tonight. Mike Carey, former NFL official. If you missed the show tonight, you missed that. You missed Robert Klemko, writer for SI.com and the MMQB.com. He's in town doing a story about the Bills getting set to move to training camp. And in the first hour, Daniel Brown of the San Jose Mercury News. If you miss any of that, you can backtrack and check out our website, BuffaloBills.com. Our producer, Jay Harris, will be posting some of those interviews, the entire audio portion of those interviews and recaps of those interviews. There's a lot on the website now. You might not think it because camp doesn't open until Friday, but I just took a look. Chris Brown is continuing his series of stories about the camp countdown. Today's edition, who will be the starting strong safety? Who will be playing opposite Aaron Williams? Will it be Denoris Searcy? Will it be Duke Williams? Who will be the starting strong safety? And earlier on, camp countdown, how will the offense take advantage of running back depth? A couple of stories that are up on our website right now from Bills insider Chris Brown. Also, a video piece that I did, Nathaniel Hackett, excited for the upcoming season, a video one-on-one interview with Nathaniel Hackett, E.J. Manuel from his appearance on NFL Total Access the other day. All of that up right now at BuffaloBills.com, and portions of our show will be there as well as we move forward. You can listen to the parts of this show that you may have missed a little bit later on. We're here all week from 7 to 9 p.m. with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Bills quarterbacks and rookies arrive on Wednesday to go through a couple of days of workouts here before everybody assembles at training camp at Fisher on Friday with the first practice on Sunday. That Nathaniel Hackett one-on-one we did a couple of weeks ago at the end of mini camps and OTAs, and there's no doubt about it, Nathaniel Hackett admits that EJ Manuel, the Bills quarterback, is the key man on the Buffalo offense, and we asked the Bills offensive coordinator, what strides does Manuel have to make to bring the Bills to the playoffs this year?
Any team that you're at, it's going to be about the quarterback. Quarterback's always, he touches the ball every single time, and he's got to make those good decisions. I think the big thing for EJ is not to let it get to him, not let that pressure get to him. Understand that he's going to make plays because he's a very gifted person, very gifted athlete, and he's very smart. He's worked so hard. And he just don't do too much. Just work within the system and trust it and evolve and get better and better, because there are going to be some times we are going to have to lean on him in some critical situations like last year, and there's going to be times when he's going to allow to turn around and hand that ball off to one of those horses in the backfield. So I think it's one of those things is don't do too much. Just work within the system and just keep moving the chains. Keep on moving the chains, wearing down the defense, and then those great plays are going to happen. So I think just as he gets familiar with it and gets more confidence, that's when he's going to be better and better.
Nathaniel Hackett, the Bills offensive coordinator, his thoughts on EJ Manuel as we approach training camp. Well, tomorrow night on the show, we're going to talk about the second week of preseason and the Bills. I guess it'd be, after a couple of weeks, he'll be in Canton, Ohio to play in the Pro Football Hall of Fame game against the New York Giants, and Andre Reed going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame that week. Joe Horgan from the Pro Football Hall of Fame will join us tomorrow night to talk about that. Andre's big weekend and the Bills in Canton coming up in just a couple of weeks. That's on tomorrow night's show. That'll do it for us tonight, though. Our engineer tonight, T.J. Luckman, our producer, Jay Harris, Bills Director of Broadcasting, Jeff Matthews, happy to be back. Back in the saddle for another show. We'll do it again tomorrow night. Make sure you join us tomorrow night at 7 o'clock for the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.